This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Three episodes every week as we get set for week 12. It starts tonight with Maction. We record this on a Tuesday. And by the way, you can read Maction write-ups courtesy of my co-host on Tuesdays, Adam Burke. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Wednesdays with Wes, and then Matt Humans and I breaking down the card on Thursday. Good week, 5-2, happy about it, but one was just a flat-out bad pick. The other, I'm still annoyed how North Texas didn't get home, but we press on. Mr. Burke, how are you, sir? As we're going to make this a brief one, probably under 30 minutes, get in and out, get some observations, and get on with our day here as we have to, you know, prepare ourselves for three games of Maction tonight.
Yeah, man, all good. You know, wife and I went up to Reno and Tahoe over the weekend, so kind of out of the loop a little bit. But look, I mean, we put out five guides in 8 weeks over at vsin.com. So, you know, it's a very busy time of the year. You got basically, I mean, now that baseball's done, you got five major sports going, had six for a while there. So, you know, it's one of those things where just need a little bit of a break. Got it. Got to go. Reno sucks, by the way. Tahoe's gorgeous. But yeah, you know, hey, good to get away. You know, it does mean you're out of the loop a little bit. Then you got to do some catching up to be sure. But look, I mean, I really don't know how much catching up you have to do with college football right now, because I don't know if anybody's good. I don't know if anybody is super trustworthy, as we talked about on last week's show. And you know, we're kind of at the point where everybody's beating everybody. Conferences are cannibalizing themselves. Officiating sucks. And now I think the big question is how many of these teams are still invested in the rest of the season, especially if they have a potential lame duck head coach and the players know that they're going to head for greener pastures and transfer after the year.
Well, we do have another fired head coach. We'll see if there's another fired coach bump. I tend to say no with this one, but I had a wrong read. Thankfully, didn't bet against Rice when they beat up on Navy. Shouts to the Mids. They bounced back with a win over USF. All right, a bunch of things I want to hit on here. First and foremost, you knew it was going to happen. Last Tuesday, I vowed off betting against Indiana. Got multiple folks tweeting me saying, "Oh no, please don't do it. Don't go again. Don't, you know, you're the reason that Indiana's covering all these games." Yes, I'm the sole reason, but Indiana gets the win. It's all they need to do. Bye week, they head into Ohio State for a massive showdown. By the way, Wednesday night on VSiN Primetime at 8:30 Eastern Time, Matt Grill will jump on and we'll talk about look-ahead lines, which will include Ohio State and Indiana as they put up that look-ahead line. You know, we're going to get the new installment of the rankings coming out tonight between college basketball. It's that annual Champions Classic. You know, the committee goes, or the crew goes to wherever those games are being played this week. But, you know, when you look at this Indiana-Ohio State game, which is still far and away, where are you on Indiana right now? You know, I'm kind of conflicted because obviously they've been the best cover team in college football this year, had covered eight straight. They're 10-0 straight up, 8-2 against the spread. But as we all know, the schedule has been very lackluster. And this is going to be, I don't want to say it's their first real test, but you know, this is a step up in competition, no doubt, for Kirk Cignetti's squad as they head to Ohio State. So curious what that number is ultimately going to be.
Yeah, so as I look at it right now, I have Ohio State a 10.5 point favorite. Ohio State is tied for the number one team in the country in my power ratings. So, you know, look, I mean, you have to respect what Indiana has done. But I talked about it last Tuesday on the show, and even wound up taking a piece of Michigan, as much as my Ohio State-Michigan hating heart felt very pained by it. I had Michigan last week. I talked about it last week on the show, talked about it on my appearances. Indiana was finally playing a team with talent. They were finally playing a team that had better athletes than they do, and they struggled throughout a pretty decent stretch of that game. And so, yeah, I mean, you get Kurt Cignetti with a big-time bye this week, and I think that's something that's important for him, whereas Ohio State has to go out there and play a controlled scrimmage against Northwestern. but it is one of those things where, you know, for Indiana, I mean, hey, prove it to me, right? I mean, Nebraska, they're changing offensive coordinators. They're clearly a dumpster fire. Northwestern's not a good team. Maryland is going to make a bowl game, or actually they're probably not going to make a bowl game this season, but yeah, they're a program that's kind of mid in the Big Ten overall.
Played decently against Oregon this past weekend. I'll give
them
that credit. Yeah.
They did. Yeah, and Oregon, I mean, you know, Oregon, you kind of wonder if they sort of fall asleep at times, stuff like that. But look, I mean, this Indiana offense that has been so good, 246 yards, 28 carries for 40 yards. Michigan's defense really stifled them. And sure, they were up 17-3 at half, and that's great. But, you know, I think if Ohio State is 10.5 as my number puts them at, I'm going to take the Buckeyes in that game. There's just such a massive, enormous talent disparity in this game, and I think has to show through.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what that number is, see what the public and sharps do with that number. So, you know, I mentioned this is a team in Indiana that has been a great cover team. Another team that has defied a lot of logic from a covering standpoint and found another way to win. They've won now two games with less than 10 seconds to go, and that's BYU. I was on Utah last week. We got to the window. Got a little sweaty there with the pitchy-pitchy woo-woo at the end of the game. Shouts to SVP. I think they lose this weekend. I think this, you know, start here. Kalani Sitake and that squad deserve all the credit in the world to be here right now, to be undefeated, have the win over SMU that continues to age well, have the win over Kansas State. But let's be honest. I mean, this team continues to just figure out ways to get these wins. They went down to UCF. I was on the wrong side of that one. They pummeled UCF, but they should have lost to Oklahoma State, a team that's winless in the Big 12. They probably should have lost to Utah. I know Utah's AD was a little up in arms on that one. And Kansas is playing much better football. I mean, you talk about a team that has been completely snake-bitten in close games, and shouts to Humans. He was on Kansas. I ultimately got to the window on Kansas, didn't give it out on the podcast just because I didn't love the situation with Iowa State coming off the loss to Texas Tech. But Kansas is getting better. This is a team that you look at them and they have losses by, you know, 6-3, 4-4, 2. And now they've got an opportunity. It's always tricky to go up to Provo. But they've got an opportunity to really wreak some havoc in this conference. How about Kansas the next 2 weeks? At BYU and home to Colorado, I think Kansas has got an opportunity to play some serious spoiler. And they're 3-6. Bowl games mean a whole hell of a lot to that program. I still believe in Lance Leipold. First bet that I put in on VSiN.com/picks was Kansas +3.5. It's down to 3. Certainly don't love it as much there, but I think they win this game outright. I like the Jayhawks here.
Yeah, I think so too. Interesting here. You got the Jeff Grimes revenge game. He was the offensive coordinator at BYU and wound up going over to Baylor. So it's not like he got fired or anything like that. It wasn't on bad terms, but you know, I think the familiarity part then becomes really interesting that he was Kalani Sitake's offensive coordinator for a few years there. So that's something that's kind of intriguing here, but you know, look, Kansas was a team I wanted to fade coming into the season. You know, everybody made a big deal about Andy Kotelnicki leaving, and you know, we talked about him and what happened in that Penn State Ohio State game last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. But you know, Grimes, it took some time here. You know, Jalen Daniels is a guy who's been hurt basically for the last three seasons. You know, so he had some rust to shake off as well. But offensively, this team has really truly gotten it going here. You know, big 45-point effort against Iowa State in their last game. The offense is humming. The defense is undoubtedly a concern. And I think that this will be a shootout type of ball game. I think it will be one that probably does come down too late in the fourth quarter or something like that. But I think Kansas is capable of making plays. Whereas you look at some of the teams that BYU has faced here recently. Utah, they've had quarterback issues all season long. UCF, they actually changed their quarterback here throughout the course of the season. Arizona's a dumpster fire. Oklahoma State, that 3-point win against the Cowboys doesn't look very good at all right
and
now.
And if Rangel doesn't get hurt in that game, they lose. I am convinced right. of that. He did get hurt. They won. You know, I mean, go back and watch the end of that game. I mean, that is one of the most miraculous victories you may ever see. The tackling was piss poor from Oklahoma State. But look, I'm not trying to knock them, but it is seeming like at the point where we get to this point in college football, and it happens every year, where you look at these teams, and Indiana, I don't lump in there because they've beaten the crap out of pretty much everybody that they've faced. BYU's had a lot of these, you know, the weird win over SMU. Congratulations. That's a really good win. But you go back, you look at that SMU starting the wrong quarterback. You know, the Kansas State game, you had a, you know, a punt return and a fumble recovery, I believe. I think they only had 200 some odd yards of offense. It's just they keep finding ways to win. It almost feels a little bit like TCU a couple of years ago as they, you know, skated their way through. All credit to them. They got all the way to the national championship. But I said it from the jump, Adam. The Big 12 is going to cannibalize itself. It's starting to do that. Kansas State losing 2 weeks ago to Houston. Iowa State's now lost two in a row. Colorado is sitting there with one win. You know, they've got Kansas next week. I don't believe BYU is going to go undefeated, and I think they get knocked off this weekend. You know, look, here's the fact of the matter is they would be an underdog if this game was at Arrowhead Stadium or near a pick.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And look, if they don't lose this week, I think they lose in Tempe against Arizona State. So, and frankly, they could lose both of them. Truth be told, it wouldn't shock me at all. Honestly, if they lose to Kansas this week, I am 100% taking Arizona State next week because, yeah, your college football playoff dream is still there. But, you know, the when you lose a game, right, you know, you do start to question everything, you know, and I like to fade streaks in the NBA, NHL, stuff like that. You know, it's not really a market that I not really a couple of markets I spend too much time in. But when you're on a winning streak and then all of a sudden you lose, you know, there's a little shot to the confidence. You kind of start thinking about what went wrong as opposed to everything you were doing right prior to that. And look, I mean, officiating aside, right, BYU should have lost that game last week. So
just they've had a lot of these athletic calls. Director.
And look, I mean, I will say this. If they win this week against Kansas, next week sets up very much like Miami and Georgia Tech, in my opinion, where Miami is a team that's, you know, pulled victory from the jaws of defeat many times over this season. BYU is going to lose either this week or next week. I would be shocked if they go, you know, out there and win both of these games and wind up being undefeated, you know, taking on Houston, who looks a hell of a lot better, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a preseason loser for me. I bet under 2.5 conference wins, and Houston already with 3 wins. And, you know, credit obviously to the coaching staff down there. It's been a very impressive. Speaking of Houston, by the way, Dana Holgorsen, now the offensive coordinator in Nebraska. So fun little random note there. Willie Fritz, though, at Houston has done a really good job. You know, I give credit to Wes. He got me over the top on Pittsburgh at UVA or UVA at Pittsburgh. UVA wins the game. And you mentioned Iowa State, Pitt, both were undefeated, both lost 2 weeks ago, and then followed it up with a loss. So if BYU loses this weekend, is it kind of that avalanche rollover? I think Wes called it the bubble burst. So yeah, that's an interesting one. As we're sitting here, this does not surprise me. Colorado is now out to an 11-point favorite over Utah. I don't know how this Utah team responds. Like, that was their Super Bowl. It's been an absolute nightmare of the year. Thanks for getting us to cover town, Utah. But now Keithy's done for the year. You've already lost your offensive coordinator. Your AD had to walk back his comments. That felt like it was it. Now you have a 10 a.m. local game against Colorado, a team that is loaded offensively. Travis Hunter now the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. I haven't bet on or against Colorado the entire year. I would seriously consider laying the lumber here with Colorado against Utah. I don't know what's left in Utah's tank after that disaster on Saturday night at home.
Yeah, I was on Colorado last week against Texas Tech. I think it's the first time I have bet on Colorado so far this season. But, you know, coming off the bye, they had maybe the best bye week of any team in the nation so far, with the fact that Iowa State and Kansas State both went down while they weren't playing. So, yeah. You know, I figured Colorado would come out, and Texas Tech is a bad defensive team. And so it really wasn't surprising to see Colorado do that. You know, the other thing that we've kind of talked about a little bit, at least I mentioned it last week, is that I really truly wonder if this is it for Kyle Whittingham, you know, because we have seen these legacy coaches in college football go, man, F this. Like, I don't want to pay players. Like, you know, you had a guy to bring it over to college basketball for Memphis. Tyreek Smith walks into Penny Hardaway's office and goes, yeah, I want to be paid more. And Hardaway goes, get the hell out of my program. So, like, you know, it's just not a great era right now for kind of the old school type of mentality. And for Whittingham, I kind of think that this is it for him. And so when you look at Utah and you look at the fact that, yeah, defensively, they're still hanging in there. But the offensive line has not played particularly well. They're not a great team in the trenches like we've always seen them be. And Colorado has thrived in the Big 12 here, where they got away from the Pac-12 teams that beat you at the line of scrimmage and have now gone into the Big 12 where nobody really wins at the line of scrimmage. So Shadur's been able to deal with, you know, the offensive line issues and all of that. I don't know what's in the tank for Utah, but I know the composition of this Utah team does not feel anything like what we've seen over the last several years. There's a very good chance that Colorado puts it on them. And not only that, for Utah, I mean, okay, you can go, I mean, technically you could go 7-5, but you could go 6-6, make a bowl game. That's not really the standard that Utah has for their football program. And not only that, they're on the road against Colorado. They're at home against Iowa State, who's still a top 20 team. And they got to go all the way down to Orlando to finish the season. I'd be surprised if Utah wins any of these three games, and they'll be a dog in all three of them.
Colorado now the betting favorite to win the Big 12. Just put that in mind right now. Plus 140. Crazy how this season has turned. All right, let's take a quick break.
Well, let's talk about this real quick before we get to a break here. Because, you know, in looking at this one, Colorado and BYU, I have Colorado a 5-point favorite on a neutral. So it makes sense that they are favored here to win this conference. I mean, there's a chance that they don't even play BYU. If BYU does lose this week and next, as we both think is possible. But yeah, I think it's kind of important to point out that, you know, I mean, when I look at the Big 12, Colorado is my highest power rated team.
Well, we talked about it last week. They were plus 350 to win the conference a week ago. And now they are the betting favorite at plus 140. I should have listened to my own advice and taken some Colorado. That moved over $2, and they're now even money to make the college football playoffs. So, you know, look out for those two-way markets. I know there are some. I think DraftKings has some two-way markets. If you do want to fade some teams that you think maybe miss out on the playoff, there are a lot of favorites out there with 12 teams remaining. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the SEC downfalls. Miami did it again. Shocker. And we'll get out of here. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We keep it rolling here. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Another episode tomorrow. Wes Reynolds will jump on as we do Wednesdays with Wes. We take a look at some situational standpoints from week number 12 ahead. I know Wes and I already have added to the VSiN.com/picks page, as we are both on Kansas, as we've talked about here on the program. Let's jump to the SEC, because, boy, this is a jumbled mess. And, you know, I did not bet the Ole Miss game. I think I said on the podcast I would actually lean Georgia, so thankfully I stayed off of that. I want to start first what we saw this past weekend, and then spinning it forward to this upcoming weekend where Georgia hosts Tennessee. Credit to Ole Miss, man. You know, no Trey Harris for a third straight game, and they absolutely put it on Georgia. And you think about how that game started. You get an early interception. Georgia takes a 7-0 lead, and you're like, well, here we go again. Lane's going to lose a big one. And then after that, it was complete and utter domination. Carson Beck, man, what a terrible bet by me in the middle of the season to take him to win the Heisman Trophy. He has absolutely regressed every which possible way. Think about his touchdown to interception split over the last four games. It is 5 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. It's ugly with Carson Beck. And, you know, we had Drew Butler on the program, VSiN, the College Football Tailgate show on Saturday. And it's interesting to note how Kirby Smart just continues to back him. When you think about, if this were Jake Fromm, if this were somebody else, it wouldn't be the case. So it's kind of unique down there in Athens. But which way you want to look at it, the bad or the good from Ole Miss and Georgia?
Well, I think something that we need to think about here is if you've got a kid making a ton of NIL money, right? I mean, you know, we've seen in the professional ranks, and college football is more or less pro football at this point, you know, with the NIL and all of that. We see teams stubbornly stick with players who are making a ton of money because nobody understands what the sunken cost fallacy is. Is this going to be a thing in college football now where, you know, you have a player who's getting a big old bag in NIL and the coach just kind of sticks with him for really no apparent reason at all, other than maybe that guy's just making a lot of money and they're trying to justify it and all of that. But man, I don't know, but it is one of those things where maybe they've kind of fallen back a little bit at the wide receiver position. So maybe you can kind of look at it from that standpoint for Beck, but he's not improving. He's getting worse. And you typically don't see that at major universities and colleges at the college football level. So this is a problem for Georgia right now. And the thing of it is, I mean, they're so highly ranked. They're such a big brand. They're going to go, well, they've got that win over Clemson, and well, they got that win at Texas, so we'll put them in the college football playoff. It's all good. It's all cool. I mean, you got an elimination game, I think, this week with Georgia and Tennessee.
Look, they got to win this weekend, man. Like it's a night game if they lose, between the hedges. And I think a lot of people were surprised to see this number where it was. And I'll just say, hasn't really moved, right? It opened 9, got to 10, 9.5 now. Like, I haven't bet this game yet. And you know me, I like to take dogs more often than not. But I don't think I can get on Tennessee here.
No.
A pissed off Georgia. We saw what pissed off Georgia looked like at Texas. Not that Carson Beck played well in that game, but the defense played well. And to your point, like, Georgia's done if they lose this game. They're not getting in. So they have to win this game on Saturday night between the hedges.
I mean, look, Tennessee has 5.3 yards per play in SEC play. You know, everyone made a big deal about Nico and Josh Heupel and them putting up 1,000 points on Chattanooga and maybe NC State. You know, we just kind of found out maybe they weren't that good. And then Kent State, you know, whatever. But like in SEC play, they have 5.3 yards per play. That's really, really, really bad. So this is a Tennessee team that, you know, I think they've been very underwhelming. I know they have the win over Alabama, and that's great. And the defense has been fantastic. You know, the defense has only allowed 4.6 or 4.7 yards per play in SEC play. But, you know, I mean, this is not a good offensive team. To me, I mean, you know, I don't know how much I love the idea of Georgia's offense against this Tennessee defense. So I think this is a stone cold under at 48.5.
Well, an under that came home last week was Vanderbilt and South Carolina. And I looked at that game and I looked at that spread and the money went up and I'm like, you know, Vandy's a dog again. I just said, be careful in this situation. They got to 6 wins. They're bowl eligible. They're banged up. I felt like South Carolina's defense was going to get out after Vanderbilt, and they did. South Carolina, and I'll kind of give you the floor on this one. Folks, this is a legit team, man. And they're now 6-3. They're a 12.5-point favorite against Missouri this weekend, who, hey, shouts to Eli Drinkwitz. I know your playoff hopes are still alive. Get the hell out of here. I mean, I know you got to say what you got to say. There's no way Missouri, with that awful schedule, is going to even sniff the college football playoff when the toughest team you played was Texas A&M and Alabama, and you got outscored 75-10. In those two games. But hey, congratulations on a crazy ass comeback against Oklahoma and Drew Pine doing his, you know, walk to the sidelines there. I think this thing could get ugly too. I think South Carolina, I don't know if Brady Cook's going to play or not, but this thing could get ugly. That South Carolina defense is no joke.
I mean, Tim, we're talking about a South Carolina team that could very much be in the college football playoff discussion. Right. They should have won that game against LSU.
Yep.
And they should have won that game against Alabama. We could be talking about one loss South Carolina with the one loss to Ole Miss in a game where, I mean, they just look bad.
Yeah.
In that game. But we could be talking about one loss South Carolina.
And Ole Miss, that for Ole Miss, man, that continues to age quite well, though.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this defensive line, and, you know, you would think a guy like Shane Beamer, you know, coming from the Beamer family tree and all of that, you would think that this would be offense driven. And the offense has been better over the last 3 weeks. But man, this defense is truly elite. 33 sacks for them in 9 games. Only Boise State and Ole Miss have more. By the way, Ole Miss has 46 sacks on the season, which is an outrageous number. But South Carolina is also allowing fewer than 3 yards per carry, 2.99. So they're top 5 in sacks. They're top 10 in yards per carry. If you look at some of the advanced metrics, their havoc rate is outrageous. Their rate of turning pressure into sacks is really, really strong as well. Just an elite defensive line. Now, offensively, they are limited. I mean, Lenora Sellers is, you know, had some great moments, had some tough moments as well. Obviously, he's a guy who's, you know, kind of dual threat-ish, but also just 3.5 yards per carry. So it's not like he's, you know, creating a whole lot of explosive runs, anything like that. But man, this defense is good. And Missouri, for being 7-2, haven't played a great schedule. You mentioned Brady Cook. I mean, this is a line that may catch some people off guard, but it's definitely a line that, you know, I think is warranted. And look, I'll say this. I mean, I have South Carolina a top 20 team in my power ratings. Right now, I have them a 6-point dog at Clemson. I would probably be on South Carolina in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, for those who haven't heard, Clemson, Miami, even though Miami did lose hilariously to Georgia Tech, they had the tiebreaker. Now, if SMU were to stumble, that's where it gets interesting. You're talking about a three-way tie. All right, before we get out of here, a couple things. Number one, Miami. So great. Just classic. You knew it was going to come. They were getting all this love, understandably so. And I said it on Thursday, if Haynes King's in, I'm taking the rambling wreck. We didn't really – it was a weird Saturday morning was fascinating. And just to promote the show again, 10 a.m. Eastern, the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show. We're keeping our eyes on all of that. We had the Bryson Daly situation where it looked like he would be out again for Army. Then he was ruled in on Saturday morning. So tune in, and we're keeping you updated on all the line moves. Didn't really know what to expect. Haynes King couldn't throw the football, and they still won that game. So we've seen Cam Ward's Heisman number drop quite considerably this week. He's down to around 8-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. He's behind now Hunter, Ashton Jenny, Dylan Gabriel. Is Cam Ward out, or do you think he could potentially get back into this race if Miami wins the ACC?
Well, I mean, he's got two pretty good games left to put up some gigantic numbers. Wake Forest is bad on defense. Syracuse is bad on defense too. So he has the opportunity to put up some pretty big numbers here. Look, let me just bitch about this for a second here, right? Because I hate the MVP and the Heisman Trophy and all these different things, because to me, it's the most valuable player to his team, right? Like, team success, you could argue, is directly tied to that kind of player. But look, I mean, the Angels would win 50 games every year if Mike Trout wasn't as good as he was, you know, at least in his prime before the injuries kind of caught up with him. Like, they'd win 70-something games, and people would be like, well, you can't vote for him because they didn't make the playoffs. Why not? He's the most valuable player to that team and keeps them from being an absolute laughingstock. Oregon's good with or without Dylan Gabriel, right? I mean, they were going to get some transfer quarterback, could have plugged and played anybody in there. Whatever, would have been fine. I think Travis Hunter probably is the most valuable player in the country because of what he does on both sides. He's very unique. He's kind of unicorn-esque, like we talk about with Shohei Ohtani when he's actually able to pitch on the baseball side of things. Miami's not as good if Cam Ward isn't playing as well as he is, right? I mean, this is not a very good defense, which I don't know if it's because Manny Diaz left or what, but I mean, this is a defense that squanders talent every single year. Mario Cristobal is not a particularly good head coach. Damian Martinez has been good, but I wouldn't say he's been great. Coming over as maybe the most sought after running back in the portal outside of Quinshon Judkins. Like, Cam Ward is having a monster season. It's the best season of any quarterback in college football. Like, I don't think he should be out of it just because Miami lost a game, but that's just kind of the nature of the award, I guess.
Two things to get out of here. We've got midweek football. Before we get there, we've got another fired coach situation. Kennesaw State has fired Brian Bohannon. And this is one of those situations. We've seen East Carolina bounce back after Mike Houston was fired. We saw a very strong performance from Rice after their coach was fired. Southern Miss covered the week after their coach was fired. I don't know if that's going to be the case here. Brian Bohannon, there was a report that said he had stepped down. He responded, "This morning, I was informed directly by AD Overton that he was making a change in leadership. Contrary to what's being reported, I want to be clear that I did not step down from my position as head football coach at Kennesaw State University. Since we started the football program, I have had the pleasure of coaching and working alongside so many great people. I appreciate your hard work and dedication to this program." I thought it was complete and utter bullshit that he got fired. You know, I know that they're 1-8. They did beat Liberty as one of the biggest upsets of the year. They're a 14.5-point underdog to Sam Houston State. I'm not saying I'm betting Sam Houston State, but I don't think this is the fired coach bounce situation. I think this is a, I don't want to call mutiny, but I got to imagine those players are pretty pissed off by this situation.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be. I mean, you know, this is a situation where you get a guy who builds your program up enough that you can consider making a move to the FBS, and you do it. And look, I mean, they're in the Atlantic Sun, I think, for college basketball. So they're Division I, but they're lowest of the low major types of conferences here. So you get a situation where this guy builds up your program, and then that's what you do. I 100% agree with you. I mean, you know,
they were ranked 5 straight years in the FCS from 17 to 21, and then they make the jump. They win 3 games last year as a quasi-independent. I don't know how many actual FBS teams they played, and you have to know that it's going to be a brutal transition to Division I football, and you don't even let the dude finish out the year?
Yeah.
Like, you're Kennesaw State. Know your role.
Right. And look, I mean, you know, now you also wonder, too, like, yeah, they're at home this week, but who the hell's going to show up for this now? Because, you know, college students are, everyone's online, right? Everybody's so plugged in all the time. Like, this is not a move getting rave reviews at all whatsoever. So I agree with the line move here in this game. Again, it's tough to run out there and really want to lay 14.5 with Sam Houston State, but, you know, I mean, this is a Sam Houston State team, and honestly, I've been pretty impressed with throughout the course of the season here. You know, I mean, they're trailing a couple of 5-0 teams in Conference USA, but, you know, they're going to get their crack at Jacksonville State here next week, and they got a game against Liberty. So, you know, Sam Houston is still very much engaged in the season too. This could be one of those like 35-0 types of games where Kennesaw just has no life whatsoever.
All right. Anything in Maction, the mighty Kent State Golden Flash is back on the field on Wednesday night as a 30.5-point underdog to Miami of Ohio. They have yet to lead for a second all year. 6 MAC games tonight. Got 3 tonight as recording on a Tuesday, 3 tomorrow. Anything in Maction this week for you?
Well, this conference sucks, so it's very difficult to really be excited to bet any of these games. You know, irresponsibly, I'll play something in both of them, and I do have write-ups over at vsin.com. But to just mention Kent State really quickly here, because why not? Like, what's the show without mentioning Kent State? So last week, I talked about Tommy Ulatowski and how he has like a 42% completion rate and like 11 of his completions are touchdowns. So he didn't play last week and was not on the injury report. So Kent State said, well, he was banged up, but he wasn't on the injury report. True freshman started Rule Tomlinson, who's actually from the Ginn Academy in the Cleveland area. Ted Ginn Sr. Of course, Ted Ginn Jr. played in the NFL. Ted Ginn Sr. has been, you know, an integral part of high school football in the Cleveland area and has gotten a lot of kids to college out of really, really bad situations, gotten some kids to the NFL too. So this kid's a freshman out of the Ginn Academy, but like seemingly nobody really knew that this kid was going to play. And then that line all of a sudden starts creeping out. I have a power ratings overlay of a touchdown in this game. I have it 23.5, and I have no interest in betting Kent State because I don't know if Ulatowski's going to play. I don't know if this Tomlinson kid's going to play. I have no idea. But this conference is, It's atrocious, man. It's really, really bad. Even the good teams are bad. So it's hard. It's hard to bet this conference. I know they're the spotlight standalone games and all of that, but yeah, I am not really super invested in any of these matching games that we have. There is one thing I wanted to ask you about here before we move on. And it's what I talked about earlier on in the show, where yeah, some teams might make a, you know, pre-Christmas bowl game or something like that. But, you know, we see kids opt out of the bowl games all the time anyway, right? Whether they transfer to another school, it's paying them more money, or they want to go to the draft, or they just don't want to play. They want to be done with the season, whatever the case may be. What are you trying to do, whether it's using resources or just kind of your own thought process? What are you trying to do to account for that at this time of the year? Because I think it's very hard to sit here, harder than ever before, to sit here and play amateur psychologist and psychiatrist with these teams and try to figure out where their mindsets are at right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you can, right? I mean, I think, thankfully, the playoffs expanded, so you're getting more teams playing meaningful football. But, you know, in the lower levels, it's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, you just kind of have to take a guess in a lot of these situations. So, yeah, I don't know what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, the transfer portal, I don't know if it'll eventually be tweaked. I know the window's smaller this year, but a lot of those early, you know, bowl season games were usually pretty good because you didn't have players opting out for the pros, but now you have them hitting the transfer portal and some of these best players are not available. By the way, this courtesy of Brett McMurphy, Kent State is the nation's only team that has not led in a game this season. Kent State has not led in a game for 544 minutes and 45 seconds. That is something, man. When you look at Kent State so far this year. So we will see. And by the way, as we get out of here, shouts to Georgia Tech and Air Force, both double digit dogs that won outright, as we continue to have a double digit dog win in every single week this year. So be on the lookout for another double digit dog to win outright in week number 12. Adam, any parting words as we get out of here?
No, I just think, you know, I mean, I'll full disclosure, I'm going to tread lightly with college football the rest of the way. You know, I mean, I college basketball is going on. I'm trying to figure out all those teams. The market is much softer. I think there's a lot better betting opportunities out there other than trying to figure out what the hell is going on with these college football teams. So we'll keep doing the podcast, keep doing the work, keep digging in. And obviously the playoff stuff is really interesting. But man, just the landscape of college football right now, and I guess I'll sound like get off my lawn guy, like, I don't know how many of these kids are still invested this late in the year, especially if you're hurt. You know, I mean, Jed Wills in the NFL making business decisions. Imagine what these kids are doing. You know, guys that are maybe a little bit dinged up, don't want to go, want to make an NIL bag somewhere else next season. It's just hard to figure out right now. So I'm treading very lightly with college football the rest of the way. Maybe some more opportunities will pop up in December during bowl games in the playoff, but for right now, I'm trying to focus a lot of my attention on college basketball for a lot of the reasons I just mentioned.
Well, check out all of Adam's write-ups over at the website, both college football and college basketball related. We're back on Wednesday with Wes Reynolds, Thursday with Matt Humans. Please rate, review, and subscribe. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.